The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Dennis, welcome back to the program. It's always great to have you on. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing great, Bill. It's hard, though. You know, there's censorship and then there's censorship. And we're in a tough spot here in Oregon because I did newscasts in several different venues on Zoom calls and whatever. The news guys wanted to hear what I had to say about the mere 306 accidental, purely accidental, by the way. We know it was accidental. DMV registrations. And I said, there's way more than 306. And there's potential. This entire strategy has been laid out from the beginning. It's been engineered. This is a freeway to fraud. Now, of course, they don't want to, they probably can't even say that because that would be, promoting the destruction of our democracy. But it's interesting that you can't even wedge that into a conversation and get somebody to listen.
All right. I want to be very clear. Okay. I want to be clear about this. So you're running for Secretary of State. You would be in charge of running the elections, right? I mean, as we've talked about it, and crafting the rules to make sure that we have free, fair, and open elections, and also transparent elections, which is not something that I think we have right now. We've talked about the lack of transparency that election rules have actually brought into it. And when they announced on Friday that there were more than 300 people officially found who were non-citizens eligible to vote or registered to vote here through the motor voter situation, and I've said it and continue to insist that, yeah, that's just the beginning. That's all that the system will admit to. That I agree with you. There's probably more to it. You are a candidate for running the elections, and they're censoring your ability to actually be candor, be truthful about it in your opinion, that you believe that there's a lot more of this non-citizen voter fraud going on. No one will talk to you about it or let you talk. What do you mean by the censorship, though? I want to be clear about that.
Well, censorship is, you know, you can always slice and dice a word. You can even, you know, rework it so that male doesn't mean male and female doesn't mean female.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't even know what a woman is. But look at, if I give a newscast, if somebody calls up and says, I want your opinion on this, and they start their TV recorder, we're on Zoom, they're asking me this question, they ask me that question. You know, they start the interview with, first of all, spell your last name, you know, Linthicum. Linthicum.
Right.
And then they ask you these questions like, this is the real deal. And then, of course, in their half hour, hour broadcast time, they don't have the capacity to share my opinion. So they share this guy's and that guy's and the other guy's, and they move through the story without ever saying, oh, and by the way, we talked to Senator Linthicum, who's Secretary of State. So now, is that just a time crunch, a scheduling problem? You probably run into these scheduling problems.
Oh, no. That's not a time crunch. You said the wrong thing because you actually questioned the Democrat democracy, the way the state elections are run. You questioned the our democracy thing. You were raising serious questions about it. I can't help think now, which television stations would not actually bring up your opinion that you expressed about this, given that you are running for the office that would run elections? You would think that these journalists, I'll put them in scary air quotes, would be curious as to what you think about this, Dennis.
Yeah, so Coin 6 up in Portland.
So Coin 6 would not actually use your opinion that you had some real misgivings about this then. They wouldn't go there, huh?
Right. They just wouldn't go there. The OPB, I did a question and answer for them. I did an audio that was started a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and that was a real long 6 or 7, 8 questions that I long handed out and sent to them. And then they called, of course, because now we've talked several times about getting my piece published, and they called several times And so they called with regard to this specific issue, and I told my story. And what the left doesn't, they don't recognize that they don't understand the relationship between, you know, faith in our democracy. They don't recognize the difference between faith and power and authority. I don't have faith in government because government is powerful and they're crush me if I don't have faith. That's not how you generate faith. You generate faith by your actions, by your evidence, by your true pursuit of what will make the constituents within your district or empire happy, productive, prosperous. Mm-hmm. That's what generates faith. You don't generate faith by controlling the word salad that goes in and out, because that's a wrong understanding of what faith in our, quote, democracy looks like.
All right. Well, did Coin6 censor you, or was this just the omission in which did they even talk about the fact that you're running for Secretary of State to clean up the elections?
Yeah, no, as far as I can tell, and I don't listen to Coin all day long, so I could be mistaken, right? There's always room for error on my part. But, you know, my little Google alert that tells me every time somebody sneezes, Dennis Linthicum, didn't have anything with regard to that from anybody. And so I'm suspicious that they just ran out of room in their block and they didn't have time to put my opinion.
Yeah, they ran out of time to actually talk about the most important aspect of this fraudulent registration series, you know, coming out of the Secretary of State's office, that you think there's a lot more of it. Well, see, that's not it. That's not the right thing to say, Dennis. The right thing to say is, well, we know that the current Secretary of State, this was just a clerical error, it's just a one-time thing. And of course, what is the other thing we will always hear about any kind of irregularity coming out of the Oregon Secretary of State's office? It would be nothing that is large enough to affect the voting outcome, right? I'll bet you that's the next thing we're going to be hearing a lot of.
Right, right. And yet they know it wasn't Coin, it was somebody like Capital Chronicle during the primary said there's recent reports have indicated that one in five Oregonians, that's a pretty big number, mm-hmm. and half, 50%, half of all Republicans don't have faith in the state's elections. As Secretary of State, this was a question poised to me. What would you do to fix it? You know, remember, all the while, now, this is interesting that it divides. Is it interesting that it divides along party lines? No, I don't think it's interesting at all. I think it's obvious. One side is getting hammered and one side is getting blessed, and the people who are getting hammered start looking for or imagining fraudulent manipulation because they recognize that this wouldn't happen in a normal world. In a normal world, it'd be 50-50. You win some. When we're playing, when we're bowling, you'll win a few games, I'll win a few games.
Now, but as it is right now, the Oregon voting system is designed to deliver harvestable Democratic votes. That is what is it. That's the reality of it right now. And it needs to be brought back to a fair and transparent system. And that's something that you would do as Secretary of State, certainly start working on that. I guess the question is, though.
Yeah. And this is a big deal because they set up HB 3291 and that essentially says, as we're collecting these late ballots, and you're familiar, they can turn in ballots for the next 8 days, seven technically, but eight officially, you know, this is a weird thing as well. Mm-hmm. Legible postmarks actually aren't a requirement. It says they'll be counted if they're postmarked, and there's all that kind of language. And then there's a subsection that says, and if the postmark is illegible, or not present.
Oh, it'll still count. Yeah, I know. So what's the point?
Right.
So that's an example.
Yeah, yeah.
That is room for hinky. once again. And so, and I'm getting down to it. I'm sorry to interrupt you here. I'm sorry to interrupt you here, Dennis. All right. But this is the, I think we have reached this point where, you know, I was listening to Sean Hannity the other day, and he says something that he starts to say, hey, you got to go out there, you got to vote, you got to bank your vote. He's right, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's not the system that that I would have, but it's the system we've got. So we have to win elections in order to change this system. But the system is designed that you do not win the election. So where do we go? You know, see, that's the when I hear him, I wanted to yell at him. It's like, Sean, it's designed not to have you win. Don't you get it? And so this is, you know, this idea that, OK, you have to win enough. You have to be able to win enough to beat the fraud so that you can change the election to something fair. Right. You know, that's what the right is being told right now by the left in charge. Isn't that ultimately where we are right now here, Dennis?
Well, yes. The hard part is I don't want to discourage anybody. I want everybody to get out the vote. I want everybody to vote like it. There's no tomorrow. There's no next year for the United States.
I get that. Sure.
And you're absolutely right, though. If you've seen the graph where Trump's ahead,
and all of a sudden,
2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, and then there goes the blue line just soars upward directly, right, in a count.
And if you say that, this looks suspicious, everybody tells you you're an election denier, and the Democrats have been denying elections for years and years and years. This old history guy, I really love his writing, William Leggett, described in 1835, there were riots after the election and people were killed. This is 1835, well before the Civil War, right after the founding, in fact, within 50 years of the founding. And there were riots following the election and people were mad as hornets.
Yeah. So election anger about elections and shenanigans conducting is nothing new. It's just that Oregon does it under the guise of election rules in all sorts of ways that make it easy to register and also easy to cheat if you're bad people. Right. And that's where I'm so upset about this situation, this vote.
This is why I'm always telling people, don't surrender any of your rights. Don't give the government any of your power, because those in power, they're the ones who have enough power to create shenanigans or to discount your vote. So don't give it to them. And we're already so deep into this yogurt pie. I don't know how people decide they're not. It's not like you can't. If you don't pay your taxes, you're going to jail. I saw a quote from Buckminster Fuller, and it was interesting. He says, take all the machinery and whatnot in the world, throw it in the ocean, and he says in 6 months, everybody's going to be dead. And then he says, if you took all the politicians in the world and put them in a rocket, shipped them to the moon, we'd be just fine. And this is really, you know, kind of an obvious, it's humorous and an obvious truism. These men that have power over your lives don't have your interest in the depth of their heart. They've got their own interest in the depth of their heart. And so this is the conundrum we face. We keep voting for these individuals. And throughout history, man has been very good at misleading, lying, and confusing his friends and neighbors and the populace at large.
And we have to be looking beyond the deception at this point, Dennis. I'm almost out of time. Let me grab a call. I think someone wants to talk with you about this. Hi, good morning. You're on with Dennis Linthicum, running for Secretary of State. Who is this?
This is Roger.
Roger, you have a question or comment for Dennis. Go ahead.
Along the same theme, it's a question. That new law or the new thing out on the ballot to change our voting for their ranked choice voting or however, whatever you want to call that.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of wondering, it's another scheme, obviously, but I'm wondering ads that support that. Where are the ads that say that it's bad?
That's a really good question. Dennis, what say you?
It's see, it's hard. How much money did you give to the, you know, Stop Ranked Choice Voting campaign? Probably nothing, right? And yet the amount of money collected by these people who want to run your life is enormous because they see the big haul at the end of the day. So there's money and power and glory there if you'll just join on to this cause. It's hard for you and I to impact that. When your local library district has vote yes on the library up and down the neighborhood, there's nobody in your neighborhood who spent money to design a sign that says no on the library district. And because there's, you know, we're busy watching our own pocketbook and it's hard to generate momentum. All the employees that work at the library district or who are going to get raises or cool offices.
Yeah, yeah. But be careful. I don't want to waste time going off there. I get the point, you know, of what you're going at, that the system is always going to find a way to say, hey, vote for us and vote for this. In other words, there is no real money that we're aware of going against these bloodthirsty ballot measures. All right. But I do think it's simple to say no to all of them. I think ranked choice voting is dangerous. I also think that ranked choice voting
is unconstitutional, or not unconstitutional. It's illegal. The ORS specifically says for ranked choice voting. I wrote about this in my newsletter from a week or two ago. Uh-huh. Ranked choice voting has to be tallied by precinct. Voting has to be tallied by precinct. Ranked choice can't work by precinct because you've got to tally all the votes across all the different 1-2s and 3s and choices across the entire district.
Oh.
And you cannot do it by precinct, so it would be unlawful. But we've seen unlawful things come to into law before.
Yeah. As far as, you know, who is supposed to pay for this, I would have hoped that Republican parties would have weighed in on this. I don't know. I don't know what's gone in.
I do know there's been $18 million raised against ranked choice voting.
Good.
Now, what I don't know is how much money was raised to put it there. Apparently, this is a Bitcoin billionaire from Los Angeles, from California.
Yeah, have you noticed how these billionaires always want to do it to Oregon? Why don't they do it to California first? Get back to us on it. Show us how good it is, okay?
Yeah,
all right. So, Dennis, the point being is it should be no on all of these measures, but I also think that the impeachment one is very dangerous, and I know that Republicans would be thinking, oh, yeah, I would like to be able to impeach a bad public official or something like that, especially in the state government. We've had some bad ones. But you know how that would end up playing out in real life. It takes a 2/3 majority of the legislature to do it, right? Which means that right. It will be Democrats impeaching minority Republicans. That's the reality, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly the reality. And earlier you made the comment that the 306 is probably just the tip of the iceberg. I think the 306 accidental registrations are what the CIA terms a limited hangout.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You stole my thunder on it. I was going to bring that up right there. It's when the CIA when the CIA lets a little bit out of the uncomfortable truth, and so everybody goes, oh, okay. Well, they admitted to it. It's only a little bit. Go to sleep, little sheeple. It's okay, right?
Yeah, it's a shiny bauble that distracts everybody. Everybody's writing letters to the editor. They're phone calling my office. Everybody's interested. And now the public can also, the government guys, the public's mad and they're watching this tiny bauble. And then all of your elected officials can say, I'm outraged. We're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to fix this. And now we're all on the same page and they get to express their outrage. And they keep honking at it, and everybody's, oh, but it's only 306, but I want the truth, and on it goes. And so, the impropriety that got built into the system created this problem in the first place.
Yep, the way system motor voter built it in. Well, motor voter is built in voter fraud. That's the way it is here. And the other aspect of this, Dennis, which needs change. Why do we have college students left-wing college students allowed to vote in our elections when they are registered to vote in other states. And we let them vote here like they like their residents, like they really live here. Isn't that bizarre?
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, come on, left-wing college students on OSU and U of O campuses. Go screw up your own state, okay? Don't screw up our state any longer, okay? That's just me and you talking, okay?
Well, yeah, and the sad part of this whole story is to their own demise. I mean, you know, once everybody thought these authors and, you know, kingdoms would be blessings for them, they quickly found out that's not the way it works.
All right. ElectDennis.com. Find out more about Dennis Linthicum. Please support the campaign. Yes, I'm a homer for this one because it is so important to get someone other than yet another Democratic hack as of the Secretary of State, you know, which is how we've been run here for a number of years. All right. Dennis, thanks so much. We'll talk to you a little later. Okay. Be well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
ElectDennis.com, 739.
Joel here from Butler Ford and Truck Center, and I've got a heap of help and a special offers on new Fords this month. And, well, here are a couple of my favorites. Drive a brand new Ford F-150 for only $385 a month after Ford's trading.
Visit MilletConstruction.com.
Hi, this is Lisa, the Hughes Lumber Girl, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Quarter before eight, we've had so much conversation over the last few years, it seems to be, on what is the best way to go about helping get addicts off of drugs mm-hmm. and into a more productive form of life. And, of course, the people were brilliantly full. I remember a few years ago, I said, do not vote for Measure 110. This is not going to happen. And then the people did vote for Measure 110. And then we had the explosion of homeless and addicts and things like that. And, now we're going to recriminalize things a little bit. And then, I still don't know if things have been fixed much yet. But
yeah.
Let's talk with Doug Gould. You can't see him on camera right now because he's off to the right here, to my left here. But Doug Gould is with Rock Recovery, and Dan Skudstad, who you can see on the camera at this point, is on the board of that. So how you doing there, Doug?
Good.
Great to see you there.
Doing well. Thanks for having us, Bill.
All right. And we have Dan Skudstad. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Bill.
Good to see you
again, too.
We talk with you. So tell us a little bit about, first off, you have an event going on Saturday, Lava
sure.
Lanes.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the event first, okay?
Okay? Yeah. Well, again, thanks for having us on, Bill. And this is our annual event. This is our 11th year, 6 years at Foundation for Recovery, and now 5 at the Rock Recovery Center. Mm-hmm. And each year we host a recovery festival, bringing out other organizations together with the understanding of letting families in our community know that recovery is possible. There's life after addiction. And each year we have something fun. We've done softball tournaments. We've done Police Against the Fire, Guns and Hoses. We've done the Police Against Ex-Cons, Cops and Robbers. So anything that we can do to bring the community out to let people know that recovery is possible. And so this year we decided, and we just want to say thanks to our sponsors, but our host, Lava Lanes. And I went to them and I had an idea of bringing people together because people in addiction recovery, we roll differently. And so we got together and we planned this event called Stronger Courageous mm-hmm. Recovery Festival. This is how we roll.
This
recovery,
is how we roll.
Recovery yeah. Festival. And so people can come out and bowl, get teams together, 6 different categories.
What time does it start?
It starts at 9 a.m. Saturday morning.
Okay, how do you sign up for it?
You go to rockrecoverycenter.org, mm-hmm. rocrecoverycenter.org. Click on the Rock Fest 2024, and it'll take you to the event page. You can sign up for a vendor booth. You can sign up for a bowling team. And then we have the live band Sinago is going to be performing, have over 20 organizations joining us with mental health and addiction recovery services. And it's just a great time. Carnival Kids booth for the kids, free raffle prizes. It's just a great time to get together and celebrate recovery.
Well, Doug, I'm glad to hear that. And now, Dan, you're on the board of Rock Recovery.
That's
here.
Correct.
What made you want to join this in the first place? Because it's not exactly like people get rich going on the board. It's just a lot of time. You know, involved in this. But there must have been something that Doug was doing over here that spoke to you.
Step back just a little bit. You look at two very facts and figures, and I've talked this over with Doug. Oregon has ranked in the top five nationwide for drug and abuse, addiction abuse.
Yep.
We rank 48th in the nation for recovery programs, being able to deal with it. And you know my background. I've been working within the news portions for many years. And you see so little happening, little information going out. It's basically something that's just been pushed aside. And so I've got to know Doug several years ago through the chamber. And I've seen what he's done. And I've come to actually respect him about what he's trying to do, but taking a total different approach of being able to go faith-based, looking at the whole person. It's like, well, you know what? This actually can work. And you look at the recovery ratios, basically, when you look at faith-based versus non-faith-based, and you see a huge spectrum.
Mm-hmm. So, Doug, what is the difference, since Rock Recovery is a faith-based recovery program?
Sure.
What is the difference between the way you would approach drug addiction with a client and, let's say, the secular? Yeah, just a standard one. And there are many of those around here.
Sure. Well, you first have to understand why people use in the first place. You know, we have a parent support group that we are re-kicking back again in October. And you can go on our website to know the dates on that. But one of the things that over the years, because I'm a recovered alcoholic, I gave up 21 years of sobriety.
Okay, you know what? So
absolutely.
You've been down the road.
Absolutely. Okay. And so, you know, addiction behavior is not the cause. And I want the listeners to understand that. The addiction behavior of your loved ones, or maybe you find yourself struggling with addiction, that's not the cause. That's a symptom of something deeper. And what we find out is there's a great book out by Michelle Rosenthal that says we humans have this innate ability that when we go through pain and trauma, we will develop a behavior that gives us safety, comfort, control. That's what addiction is. So you can't just focus on the addiction behavior. You have to go back and focus on those underlying issues. Now, years ago when Steve started Foundation for Recovery, you met Steve years ago.
Yes.
You interviewed him on your show. He got tired of seeing the revolving door of people going in and out of recovery, and we're missing something. And one of the things he noticed is that there's no talk about faith or about God in recovery. And so he wanted to open up an organization that allowed people an option if they want to use faith as a pathway of their recovery. And we're finding out that when people can reconnect with their faith, right, forgiveness begins to happen, right? Because one of the things that hold people in that pain and trauma is the shoulda, coulda, would-haves, the if-onlys.
The regrets. Yeah.
Life is unfair. It's injustice. I've been a pastor over 40 years. One of the proverbial questions I always get asked, Bill, is why does bad things happen to good people? And the answer I give to folks, especially in recovery, is listen, we live in a land of free will, and sometimes someone else's free will hurts us. And when we carry that hurt and we don't know how to process it, and so we use faith and one-on-one peer mentoring, counseling and peer mentoring. We have peers that are at the Rock who have lived experience, so they understand what it feels like to put a needle in their arm, a pipe to the mouth, or a bottle to their lip. And so the idea is when you can connect on that level and then use the faith aspect of it, of forgiveness, moving on, we're seeing 65.42% success rate.
So almost two out of three are successful.
Long-term sustainable recovery.
Wow. Now,
yeah, that's huge.
What is that, let's say, in the non-faith-based?
Okay, so secular world, you're probably looking about right around from 8 to 12%.
So, really?
Mm-hmm.
So
and that's high numbers.
So you're 4 to 5 times more effective.
And what's effective?
At looking at at keeping people off the bad behavior and off of this.
Yeah.
That's really amazing. I can't help but wonder: is there a component of when there's the when there's faith based, when you have a faith based system, is there a little bit of that even within your faith of there's someone looking over my shoulder that maybe you're not getting in the and I know people who are atheists or non-churched or whatever think we're probably crazy for even bringing this up.
Sure.
But you know that there's someone looking over the shoulder and monitoring it, so to speak, and that you don't get in a secular system.
You
know, I don't know.
I'm not sure if it's that, but I do know this. When someone begins to forgive themselves, we are our worst critics, right? And that going back, I have a saying, it's okay to glance at your past. Be careful not to stare. Because when you stare
or at the, dwell on it,
or
right?
dwell on it, right? And if people can't seem to process it through, we believe not everybody that comes through our doors at the Rock uses faith. And that's okay. It's an option for someone that wants to use.
Oh, so it's an option. It's not the requirement then. I did not know that. Okay.
And what's really
What's
really cool though is what makes this Rock Recovery Center work is because when someone comes through the door, they are matched up after we do an assessment, after we talk with them. There's a connection made with our staff. Some are paid, some are volunteers, but most all of our staff have lived experience. So you're actually talking to somebody that knows what it feels like, and that connection's made. And so there is a sense of hope given to that client. But when we use faith on top of that, then we can start processing the shoulda, coulda, would'haves and the forgiveness.
Yeah,
and
it
moving
seems
on.
To give a little, more of a kick.
Exactly.
Right? There we go. Doug Gould from Rock Community, Rock Recovery Center with me this morning. Dan Scudstead's on the board of that fine group, too. Remember, Saturday is this is how we roll.
Recovery Festival, yeah.
And that's going to be starting at 9 o'clock, Lava Lanes. I want to make sure you know about this if you wanted to meet some great people and take part in this and help raise funds, I guess, for the program, right? Mm-hmm. You know, doing that kind of thing. Lava Lanes, Saturday, 9 o'clock at Lava Lanes in Medford. Now, let me take it over to one of my concerns, and I don't know if I'm off base or not for having been this, is that I'll even hear PSAs from various groups that are saying, you know, addiction is a disease in which everything is medicalized. And I'm not so sure that's true. And I know that it helps get a lot of grant stream funding, and I'm sure the medical world would like everything to be medicalized and to say that it's a disease. In other words, you treat it as if you had polio or something like that. What is your opinion about this, having walked down this this road?
Sure, that's a great question. I get that question a lot from pastors. So, I started drinking and using drugs in eighth grade.
Right.
And eventually when I gave my heart to the Lord, my junior year in high school, I just basically turned away from it. But what I didn't understand was the fact that I didn't know at the time, but I had alcoholism in my family. So the way I answer that question is when someone asks me, is addiction a disease or a moral failure? My answer is yes. And here's the question.
Now, you see, that kind of cuts both ways.
Right.
It's interesting because I know that there's a big lot of a lot of our culture today is no matter what you did, it's never your fault.
Yes.
Right. And I'm thinking, you know, that's not realistic.
No.
I mean,
no.
It's like nobody made me take the first hit of fentanyl.
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
I had to make the choice. Right.
Correct.
Now, if you're held out and someone sticks it into you, OK, then we might be able to talk about that.
Exactly. But but the thing being is that I had to pick up. But what I did know is that I had a chemical reaction to alcohol in my family, that when I took that chemical, my reaction of dopamine levels went off the charts. Now, when you think about disease, you think about something that's catching.
Yes.
Don't think of that way. When they say about the disease of addiction is how that person's brain chemistry acts to that chemical.
Okay, now that makes sense.
Which creates the malady of the body.
All right. Okay.
Or an allergy that I need more. That's the craving or the disease of addiction. So I want the folks to know it's not something where, hey, don't touch me. I'm contagious.
I'm catching, yeah.
Right? But listen, we drink and we use not because this person did that or that person did this. We like our drug or that drink because we like the effect produced by that chemical. So therefore, we're going to want more. And when that chemical hits our system, that's when it kicks in.
So, Doug, how do you get an addict to get to the point where they would love to be without that hit, without that chemical enhancement, without that euphoria or dopamine hit?
Sure.
You know, how do you work through that?
Sure, sure.
Because, I mean, my dopamine hit's probably food.
Sure, you know? Exactly. And here's the thing.
But you need food to live.
Yes,
you know?
But here's the thing. Like the author says, we will develop a behavior that gives us safety, comfort, control.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a chemical addiction like heroin, meth, fentanyl, whatever it be. It could be gambling, porn, sex, whatever it could
be.
It gives us that sense of control and that relief. And so what we do in recovery is we ask the development discrepancy type of thing. We say, okay, well, tell me what it feels like when you don't have that drug or that drink. All right. Well, I feel this, this, and this. All right. If I could show you a way to live without the chemical and still handle those underlying issues, would you be willing to take a journey with us? And most of the time, everybody says, yeah, right? Because they want to fix this over here. Mm-hmm. But unless you focus this over here, you're not going to fix that behavior, right? Is that? Yeah. You agree?
Yeah. So Dan and Doug, what is it like when you're dealing with the nonprofit world? And of course, and I know I say this derisively sometimes because so much of Oregon's recovery and treatments of every kind of malady tends to be funneling lots of money through what I've termed the nonprofit racket, okay, in which there's never, ever going to be a cure for something because that would get in the way of the grant stream funding. Mm-hmm. Do you take grant stream funding, and how's that working? How's that working out for you? I have to...
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, it takes money to run this kind of stuff, but I'm always kind of reticent about, okay, at what point does the money coming from the state of Oregon, I think of like the $1.5 million stab and wagon grants and various other things, end up becoming the heroin, the self-perpetuating problem. You know, there's never enough, you know, if we just had more resources, we'd fix the problem.
Yeah. You want to take that?
There's a couple things to that.
Yeah.
First of all, yes, the state wants to be able to fund, what they want to control.
Right.
And so when you have a nonprofit that wants to be able to do what they feel is correct, what they feel is best, that is contrary to the state, it's always going to have at odds. So now you have this battle going on. Do you want to do what you believe is best? Do you want to do what the state believes is best? And so the two will never go into mix. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, organizations like The Rock, any kind of a Christian organization or whatever organization, they're always going to be struggling for the funding.
So you're not down with it. If anything, you would think that the other nonprofits would be embarrassed that they're only looking at 8-12% success rate.
But that's good numbers for them.
Yeah. It is.
Yes.
Really?
For them, that's great.
Well, I think we're going to see what the numbers are going to come out of 2024. But one of the things one of the positives of Measure 110, okay? Now, I voted against it because you ask anybody in active addiction, well, listen,
let's make it open season decriminalize everything, you'll be fine, right?
We know how much we can get by with carrion, that's how much we're going to get by with. But anyway, we saw what happened over it. It was repealed on recriminalizing this level, and it's a stair stepping. But anyway, getting back to the question regarding funding, the funding part of the Measure 110 really assisted a lot of organizations, including us.
Okay.
The problem with the Measure 110 grant was it was a 2-year stipulation, and we had to spend all the money. So we had to give a portion of our money back because we did not spend it all within those 2 years. However, we were being good stewards of the funding.
You know, that would probably get you fired at another nonprofit. You know, do you mean you didn't spend all the money?
Well, this is my point. We have great people at the state level, and they understand what we're trying to do at The Rock. However, we have to be very careful at The Rock because we have a core values, if you will. Mm-hmm. Right. We're listed in the state of Oregon as a religious organization, but we have to be careful because we don't want oversight to have someone come in to tell us what we can or cannot do. Right. So I will tell you, over the last 3 years during the economic climate that we're in right now, mm-hmm. we have seen giving drop 35% over the last 3 years, and nonprofits that base their work on giving, including churches, we see a depletion in funding. So we're craving for funding. Problem is, we have to be very careful who we seek for grant funding so we don't have that oversight where that someone can come in and tell us what we can or cannot do.
And tell you how to fix what's not broken.
Correct.
Because you're already quite
successful.
I think
what's happening at our state level is that we're trying to find a things that works, right? But I will tell you, I've got some personal opinions on harm reduction and things of that nature. But if you give someone hope and connect them with that one-on-one process, it's going to work. But we are in a big crisis here in the state of Oregon, and we're trying to find things. But the last thing we need to do is enable those who are continually caught in addiction. and the consequence. Listen, I have a saying, Bill, all the time. I say this: until the addict or alcoholic can feel the consequences of their behavior, there's no motivation for change. Okay? And so
you have to want to be clean and sober more than
right.
The dopamine hit.
I think sometimes we become the worst enablers by just continually throw money at what we think the solution is going to work. And when it doesn't give the numbers, we need to move on and find out. And what's really working, Bill, is peer mentoring. Peer mentoring was started by Steve Hill back in 2011 here in the state of the Rogue Valley.
And of course, Steve is the one that founded.
Exactly. Founded Foundation for Recovery. And when the door closed in 2018 and I moved on to start The Rock, because we wanted to have a place that opens up to all forms of addiction, not just chemical.
Yeah.
He had the right idea, right? Partnering up with somebody that once was there, knows what it feels like to put that drug in their system, but knows what it feels like to be clean and sober, to give someone hope. There's change is possible, and recovery is possible, and we just have to give people the opportunity on that one-on-one connection, and that's where our money should be being thrown at. Our money should be thrown at that peer mentoring model that we created so many years ago. The Connecticut Community for Addiction Recovery, known as CCAR, Dr. William White wrote the book "Slaying the Dragon: The History of Addiction in America." He's the one that created that model of that peer mentoring, peer delivered services. It's nationwide now. Right. More organizations are going to peer. We do trainings. We're state certified at The Rock to train people in the peer mentoring model. And we've helped many organizations statewide to develop the peer to peer model. And there's a connection that's being made there. And the levels of sobriety are going up.
I think,
Bill, we need to also make sure that everyone knows is that The Rock is not just a Christian organization. It is evidentiary based. Mm-hmm. It is scientifically proven programs. It is licensed and not funded through the state, but mm-hmm. It is approved through the state source techniques.
Sure.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure that people understand. Now, of course, I'm going to use the stereotype.
Sure.
Right, a stereotype. It's not there people come into The Rock Recovery and all of a sudden you lay the hands on and say, you are healed.
No.
It's not like that kind of thing,
no.
Right?
We usually use a 2x4 and then we go from there.
Liberally applied.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Got it. Okay.
No, it's their pathway to recovery, not ours. If they want to use faith as a pathway, we embrace that. It's an opportunity. You know, I got to tell you something, Bill. Yesterday I had a couple come in and I said, would you mind if I had to just prayed with you?
Uh-huh.
And they, yeah, please. And you could just see the whole demeanor change when you had somebody that's just loving on somebody that's going through pain, you know, and connecting on that level. So that's what we do.
We just love people. We are spiritual beings in earthly mm-hmm. form, right?
Good. Sure.
And yet so much of our treatment for various maladies seem to want to ignore that or completely, you know, mm-hmm. bypass that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling this may be why you have such high success numbers as contrasted with your peers.
Okay. One of the things I would also want to give you a shout out and let people know that be praying for is because we're now in the schools. And if anybody in the Medford School District listening, you need to give me a call because Crater and Scenic and Cascade have all stepped up and mm-hmm. allowed The Rock to come do addiction education, prevention, and awareness at the schools. We're going back to Crater to do 7 classes to the junior and senior hires. And it's an opportunity that we can just talk about what addiction looks like for these young people. And so early education, prevention, and awareness, we want to be in the schools as well. So The Rock just doesn't do just one-on-one counseling with our credentialed staff, but we also do community events such as the festival. But we want to be out there for the families as well.
So. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you a great time and some good money raising this Saturday.
Yep.
And this is going to be going on. This is How We Roll, going on at Lava Lanes. Starts at 9 o'clock this coming Saturday, Lava Lanes in Medford, for the Rock Recovery Center. Doug, great talk.
Thanks,
good
Bill.
Having you on. And Dan, great seeing you again.
Nice seeing you too,
Yeah,
Bill.
Thanks for being on the board. Hey, whatever it takes to help some people overcome that demon, that's
there you go.
That's it. That's where we are. It's 8 minutes after 8. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Hi, this is...